I'm Lewis.
Blog Talk Radio.
If you'd like to call in and chat with me, agree with me, disagree with me, share your opinion, I'd like to hear from you. The call-in number is 646-478-5731. I repeat, 646-478-5731. It's on the screen in front of you. I am happy to hear from you. A lot happening this week. Some big scary stuff. I mean, we're on the verge of some sort of a war over there in Syria. I don't have to tell you about it. It hits you in the face. Television, newspapers, radio, it's all over the place, as it should be. But I think there's something just a wee bit more important that I want to share with you first. And I want to talk about Greece. As you know, I've become familiar with Greece. I just spent 5 weeks there about a month ago. I returned. Last summer, I spent a month in Greece. I spent my time in Athens. I spent my time in places like Santorini and Mykonos. I spent most of my time this summer, 4 weeks of it, on an island called Amagos, where the boat comes in once a week, with no airplanes or anything else. We're going to talk about Greece for a moment, and something that bothers me, and I think it's going to bother you. People can't afford to buy food in Greece. I mean, things are tough. The euro situation has placed Greece, of all the euro nations, in the worst position economically. There are 1.4 million people unemployed in Greece. That is 27% of the population. Things aren't getting any better. They aren't finding jobs. What is happening is fathers, for the first time in their lives, cannot afford to buy food to feed their children. You have another problem. You have a growing, I've talked about and written about, a growing Nazi party, the New Dawn Party in Greece. It's just like Hitler's party back in the late 1920s and 1930s, who are giving free food to families who don't have food. However, they must sign up with the party and attend the rallies and say Heil. They do the Heil too, you know, put the arm up, they have the flag, they have a song called Auschwitz. And all this is happening because people who were proud, fathers and mothers who were proud people, could work, put food on the table for their children, are finding it very difficult. I'm not kidding you, to put food on the table. The government understands what's going on, so they just passed a new law. It went into effect this week on September 1st. You can now buy in Greece old food, outdated food, food that normally could not be eaten by humans. And you can buy it at a cheaper price. All right. And the stores will sell it at a cheaper price. And the purpose was twofold. People can't afford to buy groceries. So if we take a product that has the date, you can't use it beyond, let's say, October 1st, and we extend that time to November 1st or November 17th or something, whatever the date, the law permits, depending on the type of food, an extension of 1 week to 4 weeks for the food no longer to be edible under the old rules, okay? So the grocery stores and the supermarkets are to put this food in a special section with signs saying this is reduced and this is food that is outdated. This helps the people because now they can afford to buy something maybe because the price will have to be cheaper. That's the whole purpose. And it's going to help the stores because the grocery stores were going out of business. No one's buying groceries. So this helps from both ends, helps the stores to sell some products. I think it sucks. What's going to happen is we're going to end up with people getting sick in Greece. This is how desperate they are, though. This is how desperate they are. People are going to get sick. They're going to learn about E. coli and salmonella and things like that. No question about it. It's got to happen. It should not happen. I've already heard from a friend. I made a lot of friends the last 2 years in Greece. And I heard from a friend today in Greece. In the last 2 days, this friend of mine bought a package of rice that had a 4 week extension, I believe, on it. It was outdated. Took it home, opened it up, and it had little worms in it. Okay? Now, somebody's not going to see the little worms. Maybe he's going to throw it in the boiling water. I don't know. It's got to happen. People are going to get sick. This is an absolute disgrace. All I'm doing is sharing it with you because you have to understand. I want people to understand that Greece is in a bad way. Things aren't getting any better. They're not even holding. They're getting worse. Moving on. Now let's talk about Syria. Syria. I have written so much about Syria in the past year. I have talked about Syria. We don't belong in Syria. Syria is none of our business. It's a civil war. It's a religious war. These religious fanatics have been fighting each other for 2,000 years. They slit each other's throats. They cut off each other's heads. And who do we support? Assad's a bad guy, they tell us, the head of the government. He's gassing people with chemical warfare. Another thing he's doing, and this is what I wrote about, he's taking little girls and little boys, 2 to 11 years old, and teaching them. They're teaching these young kids how to carry explosives on them so they can be used as human bombs. Children, 2 to 11 years old. Now we go over to the other side with the rebels. They're no better. There are three different political groups, religious groups, whatever you want to call them. One of the three groups making up the rebel side that will be helping if we go over there and do something to Assad because of these chemicals is Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is our sworn enemy. Al-Qaeda did 9/11, the Twin Towers. That was Al-Qaeda. We know it's Al-Qaeda. We've been fighting Al-Qaeda for over 10 years now. They are the big enemy. That was Osama bin Laden's outfit, Al-Qaeda. And that's part of Al-Qaeda. And we're going to go by bombing or doing whatever we're going to do, missiles or what have you, against Assad for the chemical warfare. We're enhancing Al-Qaeda. We really don't know who's running this government on the other side, the rebels. They're not a government yet, but running the organization. There's three separate entities or bodies, as I've told you. And we don't know who's going to end up being the power, but Al-Qaeda is still going to be influential. And what's going to happen, and I'm telling you, and you know this, that we're going to send, at some point maybe, guns and ammunition to the rebels, which includes Al-Qaeda. And 2 or 3 years from now, they're going to use those guns and weapons against us, just as other countries have. Now, I was against this going over and chastising Assad for using chemical warfare, because also, chemical warfare has been used to kill people for the last 30 years by different tyrants at different times. The world didn't get excited. The UN didn't get excited. Nobody got excited. All of a sudden, we're excited. 1,400 people got killed, many little children. I have seen the pictures on television, as you have. It wrenches your heart. Okay? It wrenches your heart. On the other hand, this is a civil war. I don't know where the United States has a national interest involved to be secure. They're saying, well, if we don't do what we have to do and go over there and do something, then Iran's going to feel that they can do something with their nuclear weapons. Russia might think they can do something. We got a ball game going because we didn't put our money where our mouth was. I think the president made a mistake a year ago when he drew the red line. I think he misspoke, and it just came out. Now we're stuck defending that red line. On that ground, I understand, and we have to go in now and do what we have to do to show that if we say something, we stand up to it. We are the superpower in the world. We have to be credible. So whereas I'm against it, I'm for it under the circumstances. It's a shame it came to this point, and I hope it's done with when we go over and bomb their air bases and a few other things, and we're all finished with them, because you don't know what the repercussions are going to be. What's Russia going to do? I'm not that worried about Russia. Russia is not a superpower anymore. The only thing is they got nuclear weapons from World War II. They got a lot of atomic bombs left over after the war they developed them. Other than that, Russia's a little country today. They've got oil. This whole thing is over oil, by the way. All the wars in the Middle East are either over religion or oil or industry of the two. Oil is a big deal over there. There's a lot of oil and especially natural gas in Syria. Russia depends on oil for their economy. Putin made a mistake. He got his economy, his gross national product, got dependent on oil. 70% of his gross national product was oil. And now he's got problems with the oil supply, so he's not doing 70%. He needs cooperation in oil from his buddies in Syria, so that's why his nose is in there. Plus, he's mad at the Saudi Arabians because they told him that if he didn't back off, they were going to send some terrorists, Chechens, by the way, Chechnya, people from Chechnya, who were under their control, to the Olympics next February and blow up a few buildings, set a few fires, and kill people. And Putin said, "You can't talk to me. I represent that way. I represent Russia." This is what's all going on in the background. I say this: we are not the guardians of the world. We cannot be the guardians of the world. We're sick of the wars in this country. We can't afford wars. Let this be a quick strike and we're out, but it's never been that way. It always leads to something else, something else, something else, and before you know it, we're in a war. I don't know where it's going. I say leave all these crazy people in the Middle East alone. Let them kill each other. They've been doing it forever. They will continue to do it. We can't teach them democracy. They don't know democracy. They don't want democracy, and we shouldn't try to foist democracy on them. That's the story about Egypt for me tonight. We had a wonderful experience here in Key West this week. Key West is a very small community. I think we're 29,000 people normally. And when the season comes, it's only 3 months a year, or we have a special event like Fantasy Fest, we pick up 70, 80,000 people additional. So we got about 100,000 people 3 or 4 months a year. Otherwise, we're small town America, believe me. 29,000 people, this very conservative community. It's only 1.5 by 4 miles, this island. It's very tiny. Anyhow, big things happen here occasionally, not just by major figures like a Hemingway or a Tennessee Williams who come here to live or came here to live, but things happen here, it seems, all the time that are exciting and interesting and sometimes happy. They're not always happy occasions. This week, as you're probably read, because this has been all over the media, my God, television, newspapers, radio, even the President of the United States spoke about this. Her name is Diana Nyad, N-Y-A-D, Diana Nyad, 64-year-old woman. She swam this past weekend from Havana, Cuba, to Key West, Florida. It's 110 miles, Havana, Cuba, to Key West, Florida. Now, this is the fifth time she's tried. She's been doing this for 35 years. The other 4 times, she didn't make it. The problem is, this is, I am told from what I read, or I understand from what I read, this stretch of water is the toughest for anyone to swim in the world. One, you got terrible currents going every which way between Cuba and Key West. The other problem is, we got a lot of sharks down here. These are shark-infested waters, big ones, small ones. She had that problem. And we have jellyfish. I can't tell you how many jellyfish. And her problem is, last year she tried it. The jellyfish got her. She had to quit after about 11 hours in the water. It's a tough run. The only one person has ever made it swimming, but that person was in a shark cage. And that sort of doesn't count, because if you're in a shark cage, from what I understand, the cage helps you move forward. This woman went in the water all alone and swam the 110 miles, did it in just under 53 hours on Saturday afternoon. Was it Saturday or Sunday afternoon? Sunday afternoon, I think. She ended up on the beach, Smathers Beach. 2,000 Key West people were on the beach. It was amazing. You had to see it. They came out to watch this woman. And then all kinds of boats out in the water, big boats, little boats. The cruise ships, a couple of cruise ships were coming in and out. They're big. They stopped, so nothing would interfere with her swimming, either by weight or getting in her way and so forth. And she did it. She did it. I'm 64 years old. Amazing. And she's very proud. She said, "You know, this is a big deal for me. You got to have faith. If you keep trying, it will get done. And I didn't do this all alone." She had 2 boatloads of people following her as she made the trip. I'm proud of her. You should be proud of her. But she ended up on our island coming from Havana, Cuba, and we're happy to have had her here and that her trip finished on our Smathers Beach, which most of the world knows, anyone who has visited here. This has been an interesting day in history. I don't normally talk days in history here. I do on my television show, but I don't care. But two things came up today that I thought were interesting. A war started on this day, September 3rd, and a war ended on this day, September 3rd. The war that started on September 3rd was World War II. Germany had gone into Poland. They got clobbered within 24 hours. They were done. Great Britain and France had a relationship with Poland, an agreement whereby if Poland were invaded by anybody, Great Britain and France would go to Poland's defense. Great Britain the next day said, we're going to war with Germany. So did France. And Great Britain and France on this day in 1939 declared war on Germany. Now, what war ended? This is even more interesting, the war that ended. 1783, by the Treaty of Paris. The Treaty of Paris on this day in 1783, it formally ended, the Treaty of Paris formally ended our Revolutionary War. It was the peace agreement between Great Britain and the United States. Some people are crazy in this world, very crazy. Some people don't like our President Obama. Many people do not like our President Obama. I wrote an article on this for ConcLife several months ago. I published it on Amazon Kindle also. It's available there for free. And I said, why do people dislike Obama? And what it came down to was his color. Still remember in my country, because I know there are people listening to this show who will pick it up on the archive portion during the week from all over the world. I know that you're going to be listening, and you have to understand we fought a war in 1860 to 1865 to end slavery. Abraham Lincoln was our president. And the people in the South in the United States, they remember that their great-granddaddy or great-great-granddaddy fought in that war and got crippled or got killed, or his farm or his plantation got burned down by the Yankee soldiers, and they don't forget. They don't give up in the southern United States. They want to fly the Confederate flag. They sing, Dixie and all those sort of things, and they just don't forget. And here's a black man, and don't forget, we didn't end segregation in this country legally till the late 1960s. people still had, they couldn't use the same bathroom, they couldn't use the same faucet to drink from, they couldn't stay in the same hotels as white people, the black people. There's still that inborn dislike, and I think subconscious hatred, or maybe not subconscious, pure unadulterated hatred for black people. And I think that's why they lay on Obama. We've come a long way, we have a long way to go yet. Why am I talking about this? Well, you recall Katrina, Hurricane Katrina. That's the one, 2005, that knocked the hell out of New Orleans. All that, 80% of New Orleans was underwater. People for what, 7 to 10 days were stuck in the Superdome there. No toilets, no food, no nothing. The whole recovery project, the whole recovery plan did not exist. Bush 2 blew it. I mean, I can still remember his picture on the airplane going over, looking out of the window very pensive. He should have been on the ground. He could have been dropped out of the helicopter and say to people, I'm staying here until you get out. He didn't do that or do something like that. And that's not crazy what I'm suggesting. And then I remember the day after, and some of you will remember too, he had his FEMA director. Brown was his name. He put his arm around Brown on TV and says, Brownie, you're doing a terrific job. Which meant 24 hours after the hurricane hit, our president didn't know what was going on. Okay. They recently took a survey poll in the state of Louisiana. Only of Republicans in the state of Louisiana. I say again, only Republicans in the state of Louisiana. And they asked people, they said, who was responsible for the failure of the federal response at the time of Hurricane Katrina? Who was responsible that the Fed screwed up and didn't do their job properly? Hurricane Katrina 2005. Do you know that 29% of the people, 29% of the Louisiana Republicans blamed Obama? Obama didn't become president until 3 years later in 2008. They didn't even blame Bush that much. Bush, they only blamed 28%. Obama, they blamed 29%. The rest didn't know. And that's how much the South hates, the white South hates black Obama. It's disgraceful, but it is a fact. I get upset sometimes. I'm a retired lawyer. And I think somehow our judges, our judiciary, has gotten too powerful or out of hand. Especially our Supreme Court. The decisions they're coming down with the last few years are ridiculous. And it makes me wonder if federal judges, when they get appointed, they don't run for office. They're appointed. They're appointed for life. You go on 45, you're 85, you're still a judge. And most of them still work. They only work part-time, 2 or 3 days a week, but they work. Some of our United States Supreme Court judges are in their 80s and working full-time. I just think that sometimes the power goes to the head or the people don't think correctly. Something's wrong with the judicial system in recent years. It should be taken a look at. There has to be a better way. I don't know what the better way is. You elect them. I don't think you should keep anyone in office for life. I don't care even if it's a judge. You don't keep them there for life. Everyone gets crazy with power and exercises it wrong. They don't know they're doing wrong, but they're doing wrong. They become too opinionated, too biased. They don't think biased, but a lot of judges are. Now, why am I going through all this? I want to give you an example of a judge that doesn't belong on the bench. In Montana, this is a Montana situation, Billings, Montana, there's a teacher, Stacy Dean Rambold. Stacy Dean Rambold is 54 years old and a school teacher. And this 54-year-old school teacher had sex 3 times. Which is rape if the girl's underage, with a 14-year-old student. He had sex 3 times with a 14-year-old student. Of course, he was arrested. Between the time he got arrested and the time of trial, the 14-year-old girl committed suicide. Apparently, assumedly, because of what was going on, the rapes and then what occurred. This teacher, this Stacy Dean Rambold, he's before a judge called G. Todd Baugh, B-A-U-G-H. Baugh, he's found guilty, boy. He should be found guilty. You have sex with a girl, 14 years old, and you're a 54-year-old teacher. You should have your testicles chopped off as well as your penis. This is wrong. In Russia, they castrate you if you have sex with a child. A man has sex with someone under the legal age, they cut your testicles and your penis off. You are castrated because that's just the way it is. And here I agree with the Russians, maybe. Anyhow, this judge sentences the teacher to 30 years in jail. Sounds good, doesn't it? 30 years in jail. But then he suspends sentence except for 30 days. In other words, he sentences them to 30 days in the can, and then says, but I'm going to waive all of it except for 30 days. You go serve 30 days, and that's it. Now, he gets 30 days in jail for raping a 14-year-old girl 3 times. You have to understand, once you're under the age of consent, once you're not an adult legally, under 18, under 16 in some states, a girl cannot give her consent. The law assumes she doesn't have the mental capacity to give consent. Even if she says, yes, here I am, please have sex with me. You can't have sex with her if you're an adult because the law presumes she can't make up her mind. She's subject to intimidation and inducement. Easy to understand, okay? Well, the judge says at the time of the sentencing, remember this girl committed suicide too, that he thought that the girl, This girl's name was Charisse Morales, that this girl was, and I quote, as much in control of the situation as the teacher. As much in control of the situation as the teacher. Well, those are the very situations that happen when you got a young kid. young kids today, especially. I mean, these young girls go around showing half their body off and wearing tight clothes on the other half. We have disgraceful situations, and I can see how this can happen. But a 54-year-old man doesn't have sex with a 14-year-old girl, especially a 54-year-old teacher who has a responsibility to care for these children. Okay. The judge also said that the girl, Charisse Morales, was, and I quote, older than her chronological age, older than her chronological age, which has to mean she looked better than 14, older than 14, and probably induced this guy and sucked him into the whole situation. Well, the press got a hold of this. The press, national media got a hold of it. And they interviewed him, and the judge said, and I quote, "I don't know what I was thinking or trying to say when I sentenced him. I don't know what I was thinking or what I was trying to say when I sentenced him." He also said, the judge, "It was just stupid and wrong." I don't know what he meant by it was just stupid and wrong, but it was just stupid and wrong. Nevertheless, in spite of these two statements by the judge, he refused to change the sentence. He left the sentence at 30 days. This guy doesn't belong on the bench, folks. And this girl was dead, and her parents did not get a proper day in court. They didn't get their retribution. They did not get their justice. Okay, now we're going to talk about the state of Florida. We have a Governor Scott here. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. I think more bad than good. He made his money in the urine testing business. You heard me, U-R-I-N-E. He tested pee. Because, you know, all the athletes got to get tested. He made a bundle of money doing that. He's no longer in the business. He's a politician. He's governor of the state of Florida. There is a movement in the state of Florida, a big movement, and it's in the legislature now. They want to require, and this includes the governor and his people, which are primarily Republicans, they want urine testing in the state of Florida for all high school athletes. You heard me. Not professional athletes, high school athletes, to see if they're using performance-enhancing drugs, steroids. And amazing, there's a Florida High School Athletic Association. They're in support of it. Now, let me tell you something. If you're going to do it to these kids, and I think it's wrong to, unless there's a problem, it's going to cost $42 million. I don't know where the $42 million is going to come from. This state is broke like every other state. Several years ago, they spent $100,000 the state and did a study to see, it was 6 years ago, the study, how many kids, athletes, were actually using steroids. Out of the 600 tested for the $100,000, 600 tested, one came up positive, only one. It doesn't justify an expenditure of $42 million. It just does not justify insulting the student athletes. A writer for the Palm Beach Post, a fellow by the name of Frank Sorabino, said, "Pretty soon we're going to have car washes to pay for urine testing." Now, since all this started, it was announced just today, Craigslist, which I guess sells everything, is selling urine samples. Good urine samples. Would you believe it? They are selling good urine samples for testing. I want to say to all of you today, Shona Tova, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. That means have a good year, happy new year in Jewish, Yiddish, whatever way you want to describe it. Tonight is the first night. It is Rosh Hashanah. It is the Jewish New Year. So I say to all my Jewish friends, I say to the whole world, Happy New Year, Shona Tona. That's the show for this week. Hope you enjoyed it. Listen on the archive, too. Tell your friends to listen. It's a pleasure presenting the show, and I'm glad you were with me again. Good night.